From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this Monday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready. Clark Ford Studio, this Monday just before noon, 11:30, as we hit the button. Obviously, a lot of baseball talk today as the Rebel season ends in Tucson, Arizona last night. Rebels losing Game 3 of the Super Regional, 16-3, I believe, was the final score. I was kind of zoned out from a play-by-play standpoint by that point, 16-3. Rebels forced the Game 3 over the weekend, win on Saturday, but fall in kind of routed fashion there on a Sunday night. So we'll talk little picture, big picture. I mean, what's next this week? What's next? Potentially we might be echoing more today, probably tomorrow, probably Wednesday, and into the week as well, as it is the conversation that will be the conversation until it is settled. So we'll get into it in a second. First, tell you about the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, where you can get the SpeedPass Plus out, download it, use it, earn points, save money there with the Oxford Exxon. Also get the lunch specials for $5.69, two sides of bread, 32-ounce drinks, and more. Clean convenience stores, great gas prices, and more there with all Blue Sky locations. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. And he'll give you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours. It's right to the bottom line. No hassle, no haggle. You get your quote, and the rest is completely up to you. You can shop that quote around. You can do what I've done, what I recommend that you do. That's hop into a Clark Ford today, 662-257-1900. Guest will join us this week on the Rafters Music and Food Hotline. Rafters Music and Food on the square, wide open. Be a great place for coming up just to enjoy a summer afternoon, a summer evening here in Oxford. You can do that. It's also open in New Albany. And then starting on Wednesday, it'll be open Sardis on the Water. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, it opens at 5 p.m. And then Saturday and Sunday, it's 11 a.m. Daiquiris, margaritas, great lakefront, waterfront views as well at Rafters Music and Food, and then Rafters on the Water.
So, you know, not really, minutia is not important at this point. Rebels falling 16-3 last night to the Wildcats. They start Taylor Broadway. I know a lot of people ask. I have zero issue with them starting Taylor Broadway. Neil and I had an off-record or off-recording conversation yesterday. It wasn't off-record, I don't guess. He would have definitely have done it. I said I probably wouldn't have done it, but I have no problem with that being the case. Look, as you watch those games play out, they were hitting everybody. Mike said last night that Taylor was his best bullet, so he was firing it first, trying to get in the game, try to get a lead and see what happens at that point. I know a lot of people go, well, starting's different. To me, that has no bearing on a lot as far as last night. Perfect? No, but right. They weren't in a perfect situation. So
pitch Broadway and you start, say, McDaniel, and he gives up seven, well, then Broadway never throws an impactful pitch.
Yeah.
As it was, they hit him, and so it just didn't matter.
Frankly, he was still the only one that got any outs.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if you want to – I mean, it wasn't a good final line, don't get me wrong, but
– But I have no issue whatsoever with that decision.
No, that was
– They
– Well, it's like in the Arkansas game. They throw Kevin Copps. Kevin Copps did not lose that baseball game. The Arkansas offense lost that baseball game. He gave up three runs. Win the game.
Yeah, of course.
With Ole Miss, their offense faltered yesterday.
Yes.
Early on, there were some chances to kind of get in it, even the inning where they – where they tied up at one. You needed to get ahead 2-1 right there. You stranded Leatherwood on second when you had him on with one out or whatever it was, and there were lots of opportunities to kind of get ahead. I mean, Ole Miss's offense had three hits and a sacrifice fly through seven innings. That was never going to win a game against Arizona without Doug Nikhazy on the mound.
They let the starter for Arizona kind of get into a groove, if you will, and then he had a lead, and so he just said
the second dude. They went ahead and opener.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They went to the second guy, and he just kind of pitched. Look, the bigger issue with and I don't want to spend a lot of time on minutia either, because what's coming is a much more interesting story than what happened. The bigger issue, if you want to have an issue with the pitching situation on Sunday, it's not the starting of Broadway. It's the fact that you didn't have anybody else that you felt comfortable with, basically on your staff outside of Doug Nikhazy. You and I talked about this morning. Ole Miss, by the end, when Nikhazy was on the mound, was a top five team. And when Nikhazy wasn't on the mound, they were average at best.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge disparity. And so, obviously, Doug had pitched on Saturday, and he wasn't going to pitch yesterday. And they didn't get much out of Diamond. Like you wrote on, I guess it was Saturday night, frankly, Saturday went as well as it could have gone to set them up. But at some point, you and I always said this about, and we're not the only people that say this, a team in the postseason, one of two things will happen. Its weakness will either be exposed and result in the end, or they will overcome their weakness and bridge to another phase of their team. And for Ole Miss, the lack of pitching, the lack of either reliable arms or the lack of development or the lack of faith in those arms, ultimately they couldn't bridge. Arizona hit them and Arizona moves on and they don't. I mean, it was really kind of that simple if you just want to boil it down. And then, yes, on top of that, this was a bigger thing. I mean, it was a different thing, but it was the same thing. For whatever reason, they were Jekyll and Hyde offensively. They would have days where they could score 12, 13 runs, and they would have days where they couldn't get three hits. And there was, frankly, not a lot of disparity, and I don't know if there's any real rhyme or reason to it. Some days their approach at the plate looked good, and some days their approach at the plate looked like they were
tentative,
kind of pressing, kind of unsure.
And they definitely did press once it got to 5-1, 9-1. I mean, at that point, whatever. It was the early innings where I was judging the offense yesterday as far as getting out ahead, kind of seeing what they could do at that point. Yeah, look, wrote it this morning. It's kind of what last night's column was about in a way. They were a flawed baseball team that got a lot of juice out of the orange. But at the same time, you have to look at what the issues were. They're kind of the constants that have been with this program, and it's last night getting ammunition to any argument you'd like to find. They're sitting here and they had some injuries. They overcame a lot of adversity from a people managing standpoint. Mike had one of his best coaching jobs. A lot of positives with the more microscopic view of things, mm-hmm. from a season standpoint. It was, frankly, I think you wrote the exact words, it was a season that they had no business getting where they got, but they had a Herculean season from Doug Nikhazy. I mean, he's maybe the best pitcher to ever play in the program from a straight college stat standpoint. They get enough offense out of the top of that order, and then down the stretch, Tua Broadway was absolute nails, and he gave you outs every single time. He could go multiple innings, and they found ways to piece that into winning a regional, ways to piece that into even getting to Game 3 of a Super Regional because of Nikhazy on Saturday. But at the end of the day, it is about a full program. It's about the year-over-year. It's about the constants that come with that. And it's why as we look ahead and we spin ahead and we do whatever we do to try to figure out where the story's advancing, it's another Super Regional loss. They're now 1-6, whatever it is at this point. Mm-hmm. In those, they're 1-5 in Super Regional Game 3s under Mike Bianco, 7-13 overall in Super Regional games. And then they're 1-8 in games that can clinch a World College World Series berth for Ole Miss. You know, Michael's at.
And after 20 years, and it's 20, not 21, it's because 20. The 2020 year gets dismissed.
You can't get counted, yeah.
You can't count it for him or against him because it ended through no fault of any of his, certainly no fault of his. But that's a huge sample size. And now you know what they are. In 20 years, they've made 17 NCAA tournaments. It's a huge number. In 20 years, they've hosted 10 regionals. It's a huge number.
Good number, yeah.
It's a huge number. 17 regionals, 10 of which they hosted. Huge number.
They're one of the top 16 teams in the country 10 times in 20 years.
And that's their
in the regular season.
And that's their ceiling. They've met Omaha once.
Yeah.
So the ceiling is he has turned them into a program that is consistently ranked somewhere between 9 and 16 in the way that you do things. And so the decision that I say Ole Miss has, I'm not sure it's Ole Miss's decision at this point, but the decision that you have to make is that what you are? Is that what you are? If it is, you need to go lock him up because he does that consistently for 20 years.
Yeah.
And if it's not, you have to decide, are you ready to roll the dice? Simple as that.
And it's such a weird decision from the standpoint of, look, I get their extremes. I get that it wouldn't be the case if you're 7-23 in the SEC. But it's not like football where you can let stadium attendance and things be the determining factor on when something is stale or off or whatever you want to call it. You know
sure.
what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's just not – that's not feasible in this because
– you have to fire the football coach when the stadium gets 40% full.
Yeah, but my point is I don't know that Ole Miss gets to 40% unless it falls off a cliff.
Yeah, right, right. I'm just saying – I'm using football as an
it's
example.
It's such a part of the fabric of this town to where if they're average or anything above average, they're going to fill it up. They're going to make money.
Yes.
It just fiscally, that is what it is. And I mean, now look, it fell off a little really in the discontent days of 12 and 11 and 13, but kind of a different day a little bit. I mean, I think at 15 and 15, for the most part, it would fill up most years. It just is the way the case is.
Well, yeah, so it's North Mississippi. It's cold here in the winter. And then the cold goes away and the spring comes, and the spring here is usually pretty fabulous from a weather standpoint. And people get out and this isn't – I say this and people think it's a knock on Oxford. It's not. This is this way in a lot of college towns. There's not a whole hell of a lot else to do in April on a weekend in Oxford. It's too cold to go to the lake just yet. You're not running to the beach in April, really. The water's a little chilly for that. So it's a fun thing to go do. They've created an atmosphere over there that's perfect. It's a built-in babysitter for the kids, and you have the – area in left field, and you have the area in right field for the students and the whole deal, and you can walk to the square and back and all of that stuff. So, of course, it's a big – it's like you said, it's a big part of the community for people who live here or are around here or who come up for weekends here.
Well, and I think this is true too. I think the diehards and the average fan are pretty frustrated with Mike Bianco, what he's done in 20 years. Diehard as in – living on message boards, our people who we love, that, you know what I mean? Like, locked into every single thing.
Yeah.
The average fan who just sees, hey, baseball program, big stands, pay a lot of money, why are we not winning? Come on, we got to do something different. I don't know, though, that for the most part, influential donors, big money people are really that frustrated. They come up, they have a good time, they go back home.
Mm-hmm.
It's an odd dichotomy there on kind of how that's set up, just from word of mouth, what I hear, who I talk to, those type of things. It's different than football. It's different than basketball because we have two conversations here, and we'll probably get into both these after the first break. Because Mike has a definite postseason problem. I mean, he kind of laughed at the question in a positive way last night. He goes, you asked that in a very nice way, but no, we've been here a lot. We've lost a lot. I mean, obviously he's promoting himself. He mentioned how they'd actually been in a lot of them, obviously. But he said there's no specific thing. There's no unifying factor to all the game three losses. Thought they just didn't play well and lost for whatever you want to call that. And look, Ole Miss has a postseason problem. There's no doubt about that. But I told Neil this morning, I think I'm going to kind of try to put this into words over the next 24 hours. From a where you want to be elite standpoint, getting to the top eight, they also have a little bit of a regular season problem. And this is where, is it a ceiling or not?
Right.
And I don't know. I'm really not even sure what I think about this yet. Because you look back through it, Ole Miss, if the tournament went scratch, if the NCAA tournament had no upsets, Ole Miss would have been to Omaha twice in 20 years. They were the number 5 national seed in 2005, and they were the number 4 national seed in 2018. Those are the only two times they've been a top 8 seed in the NCAA tournament. I think that gets glossed over a little bit and missed because they hosted those super regionals in 5, 6, and 9. But all of those, when 5, there was a national seed. But in 6 and 9, they did that because the one seed on the other side got upset. In 2006, Nebraska was the host, who Ole Miss was supposed to go play, and Miami went to Nebraska and won, came to Oxford. In 2009, Virginia went to UC Irvine, won the regional in UC Irvine, beat Steven Strasburg the first day, then beat Irvine. Then they come to Oxford. So that gets kind of screwed around people's heads a little bit. They've only hosted one super regional where they were the team on chalk to host that said super regional. Then obviously in 2018, they lose to Tennessee Tech. They lose the regional. So that's the question, is how do you get 2 or 3 games better or 1 game or whatever it is in the regular season? How do you become a top 8 seed where you're not in disadvantaged super regional. So while you're not going to Fayetteville and trying to find a win, or you're not going to Arizona against a really prolific offense over the course of the weekend and finding wins, where you get it set up for you. And I don't know. I mean, credit to the political commentator on our board. I do think that has a little bit to do with some non-conference RPI scheduling stuff. Now, that gets really complicated with geography and different things, but I think that plays into it. You know, the couple games they just lost. They lose at A&M. They lose at LSU or against LSU. They do some weird stuff. Now the problem with that, though, is you have to go the other way, too.
Right.
You can't just get every single win you possibly can
get. The Sunday win over LSU was
there's a Pythagorean theorem to this, that expectancy that comes into play. But where are those misses at? You know, where can they get that segment of better? And I think that's as big of a key as anything.
And I think I know the answer.
You know, I've been fairly critical of Mike. I think it's I think the biggest knock on Mike is not finding wins on the road in the postseason. The fact that they've never been the 2 seed to jump up and beat the 1 seed and go win a regional, and even beyond that, they've only played for that opportunity to win a regional as a non-home team one time, and that was in 2012 when TCU beat them twice in College Station. They just haven't done that. They didn't do what NC State did at Louisiana Tech, what Tennessee Tech did to Ole Miss in 18. I mean, it happens every year. I mean, Dallas Baptist, Virginia, you see non-1 seeds get there. Ole Miss has had a ton of top-end pitching.
LSU went to Oregon as a 3-1.
Well, because Ole Miss is built for that kind of thing. Ole Miss, as a program in your head, is built to go through a regional over the years as a 2 seed and win because they have elite pitching. They typically have a really good number one and typically have a really good number two. So you get to 2-0 pretty often, and you win things and you stumble into it and you out hit somebody. And that's where you wonder, is it something else? What's happened? Why is the ceiling where it is? Because, you know, the home losses have been bad. But if they were offset by a couple road wins,
sure,
you really wouldn't be contemplating them that much. I mean, Ole Miss has only lost 3 home regionals out of the 10. They lost in 2004, they lost in 2016, they lost in 2018. That's it. They've won their home regionals past that point.
They won 7 of 10, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think they have both those problems. I think both those problems are very applicable to what we're talking about. And it's where Keith Carter's in an interesting spot is – how much of that is the coach? How much of that is the program? How much of that is fixable? What does this look like? In an optimal world for Ole Miss baseball, what is the situation that makes the most sense from a scheduling, a winning, the whole deal? And I don't know. You know, in Keith, it's kind of where I will tease this and come back and talk about the two different things that could happen over the course of the next week. Is while everybody's talking about LSU, and while that's the main topic, that's what we'll be talking about until LSU fills its head coaching vacancy or Mike Bianco turns it down, is while the rollover is not a big deal, Keith has set a very clear expectation for this program by not rolling over Mike after 2019 when Mike gets into a super regional, coaches pretty well at the end of the year. They weren't tight. They just lost in Fayetteville. And he didn't roll over. I don't have his quotes in front of me, but Keith's quotes were, hey, you know, we're changing up some contract stuff. This is about Omaha. This is about the College World Series. We're doing this. We're doing this. We're doing this. You know, even after the 2020 season, it gets killed by the pandemic. He rolls him over. He swaps out some contracts, things, gets rid of that terrible contract that Ross puts in place, and makes most of the escalators College World Series based. That's what it was. You're going to make a lot of money as a base. You're going to make a ton of money coaching Ole Miss. But to make more money, you have to get to the College World Series. And that doesn't necessarily mean Omaha or bust, but it does mean, hey, we're going to stop rewarding everything but.
Yeah.
It's nuanced, but I do think there's a difference on.
It's nuanced, but it's more Omaha or bust than it's anything else. I mean, you could, if you have to make a non-nuanced argument, that's what it would be. Now, I realize that's not the way it is, but that is essentially what he said. And so, in a scenario where, for example, let's just say hypothetically that Bianco's not involved in the LSU job, which I don't believe to be the case, but if that's the deal, then yeah, whether you roll him over or not is making a statement. Because if you don't roll the contract over, the statement that you make is if next year goes worse, we're making a change.
Well, yeah, no, there's 100% that. And I guess the reason I think it's nuanced is I don't know that Keith would and I don't know, maybe he said he would, but I've never asked him this question, so whatever. But I don't know that Keith would have this level of contract in for a contract he wasn't trying to fix. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, I feel like Mike was never going to take a pay cut, so he's stuck at 1.2 no matter what's going on. So you got to figure out how to only maximize past that above 1.2. I mean, in a perfect world, you're paying somebody $800,000. Well, now, yeah, we'll throw you some other bonuses. Yeah. We'll do some stuff. We'll have a more typical contract.
Win the SEC West. Yeah. You get
but
the,
given yeah, what Ross had done,
sure.
The only way for Keith to really fix it at the moment was to knock out all the escalators other than what everybody obviously wants, and then you go from there. So
yeah.
I guess that's why I think it's a little more nuanced, is just because you're trying to repair something that was broken, not create something from scratch.
Yeah, Mike had the contract advantage. And much the way that AK had a contract advantage for years and years, and everybody would criticize it. And Andy's deal was, why in the world would I give up this contract?
Yeah.
It's mine.
Yeah.
I never had a problem with that. I mean, I was like, yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, if the contract's advantageous for you, you're not going to surrender that advantage without some form of an incentive.
Yeah, it's still a business. So
It's 100% a business.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little more about that in the week ahead. In a second, First Bank Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market, a leader in condo financing, the float down option, and more. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
Join Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels in the vault this season. Season ticket packages start at just $199, can be purchased by visiting OleMissTix.com. That's OleMissTix.com. The Oxford Park Commission is in the middle of registration for the 2021 fall soccer season at M-Trade Park. Leagues are based on birth years. The cost to play is $50, and they're offering discounts for multiple players from the same family. The season begins August the 16th. It runs through September. The deadline to register is Sunday, June the 27th. So go to OxfordParkCommission.com for more details and to register. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Also brought to you by Lamons Fine Jewelry, 1126 North Lamar Boulevard in Oxford. They've been serving the Oxford area for 73 years, from engagement rings to wedding rings to fine jewelry, watches, pearls, fashion jewelry, children's jewelry, collectibles, and more. Lamons is the fine gold standard in fine jewelry. Visit them at LamonsFineJewelry.com or call them at 662-234-2777. If your air conditioner is not working in tip-top shape, you knew it this weekend, and if that's the case, get in touch with the people at Comer Heating and Air, the name you can trust in HVAC in Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. 662-801-1777.
Podcast also brought to you by Northeast Spark, NESPARC. Service people across rural communities. Two internet packages, the Ignite, the 100 Mbps, or the Blaze, the 1 gig that powers the Clark Ford Studio. Your hometown team bring you world-class broadband, nespark.com, 662-238-3159. Phone service available, as well as portal controls, network security, and more. So find out if you're in your area, popping up in new neighborhoods every single day, and they will get you the best internet around. Again, 662-238-3159. So, yeah, look, even taking LSU out, I mean, that's the thing that we will get an answer on at some point over the next 10 days, 14 days, whatever it is, I don't know.
Or less.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Mike said that he would start player meetings probably as early as this afternoon, do more exit stuff tomorrow, and I mean, he just kind of said all the right things. He mentioned that finally coaches can go out on the road recruiting, as that's not been the case for more than a year. But all eyes are in Baton Rouge as Paul Menary has wrapped up his tenure over the weekend, losing to Tennessee twice. The Vols headed to the College World Series, really the main conference black mark when you're comparing programs. Tennessee now going for a third time in Bianco's tenure, a program with fewer resources than Ole Miss that frankly has a fan base that doesn't care most of the time, pretty rough facilities. But Tony Vitello comes in. He's dynamic. He's done a hell of a job building up that program. I mean, Neil and I were laughing yesterday. That could be a roster that also has Jacob Gonzalez on it, and that would be one hell of an offensive lineup there in for the Vols. But nonetheless,
they'd be noisy in Omaha noisy. With him. Yeah, I want to answer your question from earlier, though.
Okay.
I do think the answer is a fairly simple answer to put down on paper. Now, okay, making it come to fruition is a different creature. But when you only have the 11.7, and that's what you have, you do have to utilize it better than Ole Miss does. For whatever reason, with this team even, and there are multiple examples of guys that I presume, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, have scholarships or parts of the 11.7 who don't contribute at all, who have lost the public trust. Like, one of the things that just blows me away, Chase, if I'm honest, is look at Drew McDaniel, who at times this season was not only their third starter, but was a pretty reliable third starter. Look around the league. I mean, you know, what do you go, six innings at Mississippi State? Five and a third or something like that.
He handled the crowd incredibly well.
He pitched really well in Hoover. Yeah. Was a big reason that they kind of got into the weekend in Hoover. He is completely ineffective against Southern Miss on the Sunday at the regional and then doesn't scratch in Tucson. Wes Burton hasn't pitched in weeks.
Cody Adcock, Braden Forsyth. Yeah. I mean, we run through it.
I thought Hayden Dunhurst physically was exhausted at the end of the season.
He's very tired the last
game. You know, it begs the question, did you think about putting him at first base some to let LaPosa play some and to give, you know.
Or, you know, Calvin Harris got healthy by the end of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a top 50 catcher out of high school.
So you have these multiple people that are on some form of a scholarship that are not contributing. So the answer is, and at least partially, is you're 11.7, you have to maximize it. And I don't know that right now they're maximizing it. I mean, they got a ton out of whatever they gave Doug Nicasey.
That worked.
I mean, they got a ton out of whatever they gave Jacob Gonzalez.
Yeah.
You know, TJ McCants hit the freshman wall. They got a freebie in Plumlee.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he didn't count against the 11.7. There's a lot there, and that happens everywhere. Don't get me wrong, but man, when you get down to this point of the season and you're down to just a couple of pitchers that you trust, well, like, you know, we talked about this. Their path was really clean. Derek Diamond regressed over the course of the season. There's no other word for it. He was not the pitcher in June that he was in February.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing like a quick little just count here, and I count off the top of my head, and I would have different ways to explain each of these players. The 35-man roster, maybe a touch more off the actual Ole Miss roster because I don't know how they're factoring that up. But
sure,
there's 16 guys on that roster that if you said, does Mike trust or not trust them in the game for their respective role, I would say no. 16.
So you're down to a 19-man roster.
Yeah, I would say 16.
And one of those is a torn ACL. And
yeah,
it's a really – they were really thin at the end.
Yeah, it didn't feel like, and they're, you know, Mike said, hey, some of these guys are still freshmen. They didn't have last year. But the development seemed off in some ways. I saw the stats on the board. I haven't checked them, but assuming they're correct, almost allowed the second most runs in the SEC from a staff standpoint. That's not a typical Mike staff. That's something that doesn't typically happen. They played at least half the season with two all-SEC caliber starters, one All-American and Doug Nicasey. It, from a mound standpoint, at the end of the year, who does Mike really, really, really trust? Doug Nicasey, Taylor Broadway, Tyler Myers, I'll give you Derek Diamond, Jack Doherty. About it. There might be one more I'm forgetting off the top of my head, sure. But it's five dudes. Maybe six if I'm forgetting someone, including one guy that was redshirting into April that wasn't even on the thing. And now he gets credit for that, but at the same time.
And you can get away with a five-man pitching staff this late if all five can give you length.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But if one of them is like, hey, this guy can go two innings and then he can't go again for 3 days, well, that doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Look, they were harmed badly by losing Hoagland.
Oh, I mean
it's almost impossible to address it. But Chase, even if they had Hoagland, at this point they're a third starter short.
Yeah, Brandon Johnson. Sorry, yeah. I mean, knew I was forgetting somebody.
They didn't have a second starter.
No.
That they completely trusted. Throw in a lineup that half of it really wasn't productive. That's tough. frankly, it's a wonder that it's a testament to Doug Mukasey, honestly, that they got as far as they got in the postseason.
And depending on who's in the lineup every day, almost half the offensive lineups in different defensive positions than they typically would play. I mean, it was a lot of just sort of square peg round hole of this season in a ton of different ways. I mean, you know, you know Justin Bitch is a utility guy, but third base is probably his third or fourth best defensive position. T.J. McCants is a shortstop. Kevin Graham came in as a corner infielder. He's playing corner outfield. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on all over creation, like you said. And now some of that is Tim's injury preventing him from playing a position and different things, and it rolls around. But
if he doesn't get hurt, he's the first baseman, and they don't do the whole – they have some more maneuver room.
Because we don't talk about it because there's no way to quantify it because we don't have analytics like the major leagues do. Ole Miss was a really bad defensive baseball team this year. They were certainly a negative on a defensive run save standpoint compared to their
contemporaries. We talked about their lack of arms in the outfield. That was,
I mean, I think they only had two or three outfield assists the entire season.
Did they ever throw anyone out at the plate?
I don't think there was ever an outfield assist at home. Okay. Unless I'm forgetting something, and I could be. But I think they were all to other bases other than home plate. And I want to say maybe Plumlee even had one or two of them, of the ones they had.
Yeah, I don't know.
The defense was bad. I mean, that's the deal here is that there were holes kind of everywhere. And that's where we come back to kind of coming full circle before we talk more about LSU is there was just you have ammunition for whatever you want to say. Program-wise, yeah, things have to get better. They're not good enough. They're not good enough in multiple ways. They're not as good as they have been some other seasons. And when you start projecting out for next year, got a lot of question marks. Got to figure it out. There's no obvious answers in some different spots from that standpoint. But Mike found a way to get to 45 wins. Found a way to win 21 SEC games with this hodgepodge that I'm talking about in a lot of ways. You know, because you can't give every bit of credit to the players and then put every bit of blame on the coaches. It doesn't work both ways like that because you have to go, well, yeah, they only did that because of Mukasey and Elko. Well, they get credit for them just like they don't get credit for anything else. I mean,
and again, it might not be fair to boil it down this simply, but we talk a lot about floors and ceilings, and it appears that the way the program is set up today, they have a very high floor and a ceiling. One of those 10-foot ceilings.
Yeah.
There's no big spacious area.
The big entryway thing.
There's a roof.
Because 20 years have told us that's where the ceiling
They've
is.
They've gotten through it one time, and that one time was, and I'm not minimizing it, but they went and played a Sun Belt team.
Mm-hmm.
When they've played in a super regional against a Power 5 team, they've lost.
Mm-hmm.
They've hit a ceiling. Now, the floor, there was an Alabama fan in the thread a minute ago said, I'd take that problem. I'd love to be playing this late.
Well, sure.
And that's a valid point. We can laugh about it, but it's a valid point. The floor with Bianco is making the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
85% of the time. It's a huge number.
Yeah, they're in the bracket almost every damn time.
And, you know, they would have made the tournament last year.
Well, yeah, sure.
But throw that out, 85% of the time, 50% of the time, which is a huge number, they've hosted a home regional. So their floor is somewhere between 9 and 16 nationally, but the ceiling is 9 and 16 nationally.
Yeah, if you convert it to basketball, which most people understand better, half the time Ole Miss is going to be a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament from a basketball standpoint, 4 brackets, 4 seeds. If it was a basketball thing, they'd be a top 4 seed half the time.
Yeah.
And every time they would win a first round game that they got in, pretty much. A couple losses there, but not often. And then a damn lot of the time they would advance to the Sweet 16. But they only made the Elite 8 once. That's what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And that year they got to the Final 4.
Yeah.
Good program.
I mean, you know, you
above average program, really good program.
Oh no, it's
not an elite program.
It's a top 16 program, but it's in the bottom half of that top 16. And so you have to decide, well, what are you trying to do? And if the answer is, well, we want to be better than that. Okay, well, how do you get there, and who gets you there? Because it's my opinion that Mike's going to have a job offer this week.
And sourcing-wise, I agree with you. I've just got this little thing in the back of my head, and I don't even really know why. I don't have a factual reason for it.
But I know why.
But I told an LSU guy last night, I'm like, I just don't know how you guys sell it. I know how you sell it. I know what the argument is. The argument's very simple, is that he has zero scandal anywhere and anywhere.
Yeah.
He's going to win a ton of games. He's very, very consistent. And LSU, right or wrongly, believes their program is good enough that he can find those extra 2 to 4 wins that he needs every year to be successful. That's the argument, whether you like it or right or wrong.
You know what's interesting about that, too, is that historically that argument holds up. Over the last 4 years, it really doesn't. LSU hasn't been better than Ole Miss the last 4 or 5 years.
No.
They haven't. Ole Miss has been better than them.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, here's the deal with LSU.
LSU maximizes typically their talent. As a program, historically, that's what they
Well, when they were rolling, they did. And when they were rolling, they were really benefiting from the TOPS program. It allowed them to use their 11.7 out of state. It allowed them to get in-state kids for basically a discount. That program has hit some financial problems, I think, but I don't know enough about it to speak about it with any degree of authority.
Sure.
But look, Mannary's out. He finished yesterday. I was told something could happen there as early as tomorrow in terms of them making a move. They went way down the road with Kevin O'Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Way down the road. Like, I think a deal was basically done.
And then decided they couldn't hire him.
And then it fell apart, and they can't hire him, and they're not revisiting that. They went down the road some with Pat Casey, the former Oregon State coach.
He came to Baton Rouge, and a contract number was discussed. $1.7 million is what I've been told multiple places.
And that's
dead.
Dead. I mean, it appears to be dead.
A test balloon got shot out from one side or the other. I think I know where it came from. I think it came from Casey.
Yeah.
And the backlash was severe. In immense.
To the point that both sides saw it and just said, no, let's not.
Yeah, no way.
And so they have held out this fantasy hope down there about Tim Corbin.
Yes.
He's not leaving for LSU.
No.
They've held out a little bit of a hope that Dan McDonald would take it. It's my belief that Dan McDonald has told them, don't bother, I'm not coming. Talk about LSU.
Yeah, sure.
I was told yesterday, I asked about Cliff Godwin, the East Carolina coach. I said, is he on the radar? And my gut says that he is, but every source that I talk to down there, and I do know some people down there, say, no, they're not doing that.
I've got one source that on Thursday night said he was still in it. I have heard nothing since then.
I asked one guy just directly, you hear anything about Godwin? And he said, no. Just, I asked the exact answer was nope. That was it. They all think it's Mike. You and I both know Matt Moscona. Matt did a live show yesterday. I referenced it in 10 Thoughts, which is up at rebelgrove.com. And Matt said it was his opinion at this point that it was either Bianco or Scott Woodward, the LSU AD, was pulling a rabbit out of his hat. And if it was a rabbit out of his hat, Matt had no idea what the rabbit was. I don't think that rabbit's Tony Vitello, the Tennessee coach. I don't think LSU is interested in Vitello, and I don't know that Vitello would be interested in LSU. And then you have the timing factor of this. His team's in Omaha. They're going to play until at least the middle of next week,
mm-hmm.
and they're good enough to win a game in Omaha. So you could have two and a half weeks if you were waiting on Tony Vitello, and I don't think, based on what I've heard, that that's what LSU wants to do. So it's an interesting spot for them. And then we get into the other part of it when people say, well, does Mike want it? I have no earthly idea.
No. Mike's really private with that kind of stuff. I have no clue. LSU thinks he'll take it. Some LSU people have told me he absolutely will take it. I don't know if he said that or they just think everybody wants their job. I have no idea. Probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of both of those things. There's probably a reason for the optimism, and then there's probably some bias that is cooked into that may amplify that optimism to a place that it should or should not be.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
But the irony of this is that it's very easy to argue that should that offer come, Mike would have more security at LSU than Ole Miss today.
Oh, I think there's absolutely it's not even an argument.
Yeah.
He would enter a honeymoon phase
there. He would get a reset.
That is at least, what, 2 years? I don't know that he has 2 years, given the current environment.
Yeah, Grind, if State wins today, that's three in a row for them.
And that's big. I think we can downplay that and pretend it doesn't matter, but it does when so much of the defending of Bianco, and I'm not judging one way or the other, but so much of it is, well, there are limitations as opposed to the rest of the SEC. That argument loses some luster when Mississippi State, which theoretically has the same limitations, is able to max out in a different sort of way. Fairly or not.
Yeah, they've gone under at least three straight coaches, including Gary Henderson and interim. Lamonis now, if they win today, multiple times. And Ole Miss is 3-16 in the last 19 against State, I think. Something along those lines.
Something like that. I don't know the exact number.
You know, Mike's daughter has 1 year of school left. She'll be a senior at Oxford this fall.
A superb young lady, by the way, just for the record. These are human beings.
Yeah, sure. Been here a really, really long time. Told you, baseball coaches are weird. They kind of have their program. Mm-hmm. You just don't see jumping around much in college baseball.
21 years, man. That's
less than
time.
Most of other sports, even. Like, you don't see a lot of Power 5 jumping in any sport. But baseball's freaking weird. I mean, I went back to this thing here, but, I mean, Texas, for all – it, the worst-case scenario is a top 10 job in the country. And they offered their job to, like, 12 people, and they ended up with the Tulane coach. Nothing against David Pierce, but –
and he appears ready to take them to Omaha.
Well, yeah, well, they're there. Yeah, they won last night.
Oh, did they win? Okay, yeah.
They beat South Florida last night.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, McDonald said no. O'Sullivan said no. Corbin said no. All these people said no. I mean,
yeah.
When State had their job out there, they couldn't – a lot of different reasons, but they couldn't get it done with Cliff Godwin. They couldn't get it done with Jim Schlossnagel. They got told no a lot, and then they ended up with Chris Lamonis, who's who they should have hired to begin with. They'd listen to me, but nonetheless – you just don't see jumping around once a coach is at an established program with a lot of weight.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to go back to, like, Augie going from Fullerton to Texas to find a lot of that over the years.
Yet, if you're Mike, who I think is 52?
53 or 4, I believe. Okay. But, yeah, something like that.
Let's just say you want to coach 5 to 8 more years. You want that security that – The job in Baton Rouge is probably more secure than the one here.
Yeah, Ole Miss has not had an introductory press conference for a baseball coach since June 7th, 2000.
It's been a minute.
I mean, I still had another year of high school left. Sorry, I had 2 years of high school left. I mean, but yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah.
Lots changed since then. Positively, negatively, the whole deal.
Sure.
What's going on? Since John Schaefer is choosing between Mike and Turtle Thomas.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. Had them both in back-to-back days. Did, like, the exact same schedule. They went to dinner at City Grocery with John and Diane one day and the next thing. And yeah. Whole deal.
Things have changed since then, the way that stuff's conducted.
Changed a little bit, yeah. You just don't bring them in and go through the rigmarole out in public for everybody, so... I don't know.
So we'll get to this on the other side of the break. But the question is, I don't want to do an entire podcast without talking about this. If he does leave,
sure.
What?
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a minute. Before we do that, I'll tell you about Tyson Drugs and G&M Pharmacy. We mentioned this last week, but again, for any state and school employees in the area, in short, the state signed an insurance provider who uses CVS Caremark. It's a pharmacy benefit manager. But don't confuse that with CVS Pharmacy. The logo is very the same on your card. You're going to see CVS. That does not mean you need to use CVS Pharmacy for any of your pharmaceutical needs. If you're using Tyson Drugs, G&M, any local pharmacy, you're still good to go. No problems at all there. Stay with those people. Stay with the people you know. So just ignore that. Again, same logo, not the same thing, not CVS Pharmacy. So figure out ways that Tyson Drugs and G&M can assist you. or find out about the delivery that is free here in the Oxford area. 662-236-2222.
We're also brought to you by the College Corner. It's your one-stop Rebel Shop. Two locations in the Jackson area in Ridgeland. It's next to Fleet Feet in Flowood. It's next to Half Shell. If you don't live in Jackson, just go to collegecornerstore.com. Plus, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Again, collegecornerstore.com. Also brought to you by Pinnacle. Pinnacle based in Madison, Mississippi. They've got clients in more than 20 states, advisors in multiple states as well. They provide detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much, much more. What they do is they treat investing like a commodity. Decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotions. So go to pintrust.com. That's pinntrust.com. Also brought to you by John Edwards, Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you're thinking about traveling this summer, if you're thinking about making a holiday, some holiday plans for December and whatnot, get in touch with John. Just give him some parameters, give him a budget, and he will come up with options that you're not going to find on your own. And you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 or jedwards@regencytravel.net. Mention that you heard about John and his travel service on this podcast, and you'll get $50 off your first booked trip. And we're brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons. No 5-minute wait as well. If you want to learn more, go to liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
So, yeah, if that did happen, if LSU offers, Mike Bianco accepts. Obviously, Ole Miss would be in the business of looking for a baseball coach. I've been digging around, I guess is the word, but I don't know that that even is right. It's but more because there are two obvious ones. And then it's kind of, okay, because every reporter does this on a coaching search. Okay, who are we missing? And in football, we had a hell of a miss that we all would have gotten us had Kiffin gone somewhere else.
It was we would have had lots of company, thank God.
Oh, well, everybody. Yeah. Sure. But Elijah Drinkwitz would be the Ole Miss football coach right now.
Yes.
Different world. And
to my defense, I knew and I told you so many times that week I'm missing something.
There's someone's out there that
I've got this, but I don't have. There's something I'm missing, and it was him. Spent way too much time on Billy Napier that week. Turns out I could have completely. And when people told me Napier said no, he's not interested, he's not responding, I should have just listened. Anyway, go ahead.
Sammy says we both like For Love of the Game in Major League. But what's the solid number three for sports movies? I don't know. Let me think about it. Catches. I don't like a lot of sports movies.
Mm-mm.
Like I hate Hoosiers. I hate Field of Dreams. I've been over this with people. Like,
yeah,
they call me un-American, and I get it. But I just the really sappy thing. I'm out.
There's parts of Field of Dreams that I can enjoy, but for the most part, it's bad.
I know. I mean,
just it's a little too Hollywoody.
Also, I saw something the other day. You know, everybody misquotes this. You know, everybody says if you build it, they will come. It's he will come, not they, and Field of Dreams.
Right.
But, like, I bet 80% of the world says that incorrectly.
Yeah.
They think the people, it's the dad. It's him.
Right, right.
It's not that everybody's going to come.
John Kinsella.
Yeah, it's John Kinsella. That's it. So, anyway. Sorry.
Yeah, they're screaming at us right now.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It's okay. So the rest of the show, Major League Breakdown. Okay, look. Again, there's two obvious ones. I've been trying to
figure out. Dan McDonald and Cliff Godwin are the two obvious
I've been trying to figure out who else makes sense. And sure, if I'm just an AD and I get a list and they go, hey, go hire a baseball coach. Well, okay, I can do that. I can go find people and people mm-hmm. I kind of like, people I wanted to. But again, it's this weird baseball thing. Like, I really like Josh Holliday at Oklahoma State. What's he really done? Will he leave his alma mater? Probably not. You know what I mean? Like,
all right, well, let's talk about the two obvious ones.
Yeah, sure.
Dan McDonald told LSU no. He's told Texas no.
He's told a lot of people no. Florida at one point.
We always were told, hey, if something happened with Mike in a negative way, he wouldn't even take the call. Well, if Mike left for LSU on his own volition, obviously landing very much on his feet,
mm-hmm.
is that, in your opinion, what are the odds that he listens enough for it to be serious?
I think he would take the call under the fact that Mike leaves on his own, because he would look, if Mike Bianco was fired, he wouldn't even take the call.
Right.
And then two, because frankly, he's a little more frustrated than he's ever been at Louisville. Tom Jurich is gone. The way they handle some COVID protocol stuff over the last 12 months, just in general, not even saying he's unhappy at Louisville, but he's less happy than he was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, however you want to quantify that. Dan's been to Omaha 7 times, I think. I think he's been in the Super Regional round maybe 3 more times other than that and lost. Very accomplished on a program that did nothing before him.
Yeah.
He would take the call. He would listen. I had someone that knows both of us an hour ago, Neil knows what I'm talking about, that said he still did not think he would take it. Thought that just the whole year program thing, frankly, the irony, what he learned from Mike Bianco 20 years ago, go to a place, treat them well, and if they buy in, here's the catch though, if they buy in and give you what you need to win, stay there, grass isn't greener, build that program. Mike Bianco's mantra to Dan McDonald 20 years ago, 13 years ago, 14 years ago, everything. So,
no Tom Jurich in that AD office anymore.
That's what I'm saying. If you get
yeah.
That's the catch here. But what gives me pause is if Dan is just wanting to get out, or if he's open to getting out, why are you telling LSU no? Why are you telling other people no? Why are you not floating a little bit with whoever your agent is? I have no clue. I mean, look,
yeah, I don't know.
He has sentimental ties to Ole Miss, but that feels flimsy is the sole reason. He would win here. You absolutely make him say no. He is the – he forget all the ties. He's the perfect coach if you can go out and just get anybody you want. It's a clear number one. It's Dan McDonald.
And then here's the guy that I think's really interesting, and that's Cliff Godwin.
Cliff Godwin is incredibly interesting.
Because you pick up the phone and you call McDonald, and if he says yes, well, then you send the plane up there and you go do it, and it's a win for everyone.
Michael, applaud him. We're all good. Yeah.
Yeah. Fine. I mean, in this scenario, Mike landed on his feet, making 1.6 at LSU, and it's fine. If he says no,
mm-hmm.
or just goes, hey, the time's just not, this is where I am. The next call, according to conventional wisdom, is Cliff Godwin, who has taken East Carolina to the Super Regional round
3 times since 2015.
And they can't get over the hump, but it is East Carolina, and they've had some terrible draws and whatever. But there is a part of me, and I don't know this as well as you do, but I try to sometimes distance myself and get as close to 30,000 feet as I can and look at it and go, okay, if he didn't have ties to the Ole Miss program, and I know it's deeper than that. He has ties at LSU. He has ties at Vanderbilt. He's a very accomplished assistant who has done a terrific job at his alma mater. But if he didn't have that tie to Ole Miss, would he be any different than Josh Holliday?
Well, I mean, we're under the premise you can get him is the biggest difference. I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Josh Holliday a ton. I just don't know that you can get Josh Holliday.
Right, but my point is that...
No, I know what you mean.
He's
like every other B-plus candidate out there that it's just kind of whatever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's not a knock on him at all, not even a little bit. But I think you could make the argument so you're getting... Basically, you did nothing to retain a coach who you felt the Super Regional was his ceiling... to hire a coach who so far the Super Regional has been his ceiling.
I mean, one of the reasons why it still makes sense beyond just sentimentality with Ole Miss or whatever is that he does know the Ole Miss program. He's recruited to the Ole Miss program.
Of course, there's
those things where you don't have to wonder, hey, how would this guy adapt to the SEC and whatever else?
I'm not interrupting you, but to include this in what you're about to talk about, this is also a sport that I make fun of it and you joke around and we laugh, but this, you're basically recruiting eighth graders. So what happens from a coaching change standpoint with incoming classes, and do you need somebody who's tied in enough in this part of the country that he can keep a class together or accentuate a class or all of those things?
So, yeah, Clip is really, really good at that kind of thing. Somebody said, why would you want a Bianco protege? Cliff's a lot more complicated than that. Cliff's worked for Tim Corbin. He's worked for Paul Maneri. Worked for Mike. He's been at Central Florida and built that program with the coach that's escaping me right now that was there for a long time, Terry Rooney. He's got a really, really wide berth of experience in college baseball beyond Ole Miss.
Right.
Cliff has two qualities, and I'm biased because he's a friend of mine. He has two qualities that make him succeed at college baseball or just coaching in general. He really, really freaking cares. You see how emotional he got yesterday, and it wasn't fake. It was real. He was hurting for his kids.
Sure, it was real.
And he's stubborn as hell. He just doesn't fail because he's, by God, finding a way, and it's all he does. The Super Regional rounds have been complicated for him. And, yes, that is the knock on Cliff Godwin to replace Mike Bianco because, the bugaboo for Mike is Super Regionals, and Cliff's 0-3, 1-6 in games. And he's been outscored. I did the math this morning. I think it's 50-12 in the six games. He's gotten blown out a couple times. They played well against Vanderbilt.
Really
they just ran into Rocker and Leiter. It is
really
it is.
Well. They actually pitched.
He would have been a pain in the ass for anybody else because Gavin Williams is a really good number one. But point being, they've drawn at Louisville, at Texas Tech, and at Vanderbilt. It's really freaking hard for East Carolina to get a top eight seed. I mean, they've got to be 50-6.
Kind of have to be perfect.
Yeah, it's got to be like Lafayette in 14, where you just run through everybody. And frankly, it's where their conference almost hurts them a little bit. And I know I'm justifying, but I have a point.
Sure.
Is that the American doesn't get the appeal where you get the benefit of the doubt, but it's too good to run through it. So you're just stuck in this middle ground of...
You're going to face some good pitching.
Yeah, you're going to run into Tulane and Houston.
You're going to get beat some.
People. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't worry about that from a standpoint of, Cliff can't get through the Super Regionals. Like, I don't feel like that's a fair argument at this point. I think that the reason I think Cliff makes a lot of sense is that I've seen Cliff be genuine, but almost also a chameleon. He coaches the ways he feels like he has to coach certain players, certain teams. I mean, at East Carolina, he's recruiting a lot more guys with chips on their shoulder, a lot of guys that didn't get the offer from UNC Chapel Hill, a lot of guys that didn't get the Clemson and the South Carolina offers, but still really, really good players. Hey, come here. We're going to develop. We're going to beat some of those dudes. We're going to do whatever.
Kids who transfer down
as
opposed to transferring up.
Yeah. So you coach those a little differently. You can get on them more. They're mercenaries a little bit. You can get in their ear, and he's tough now. I mean, he's not one to not throw a few at you when something's going wrong there. But at Ole Miss, he almost kind of played the good guy a little bit. He was the hitting coach, and I mean, he's intense now. He's going to expect from you, but he could counter when Mike got a little hot and a little tight and a little whatever. Mm-hmm. And Cliff could be that other guy. So I've seen that from Cliff over the years. As far as he can coach to however he needs to coach, he's going to recruit well. I think that makes a lot of sense. And where Ole Miss gets bailed out, too, on the, hey, you're just going into Mike's protege, is Cliff, to some extent, has turned down three SEC jobs already.
Two that I know of.
He's turned down Mississippi State, and then Alabama and Tennessee, he could have gotten them had he wanted to get them. I don't know how, whatever, but that's the point. He's obviously at least minimally some semblance of a candidate at LSU at some point during this process.
Yeah, and I want to say something here because people think – of job offers, like you getting a job offer from, in my case, you know, the Mobile Register. And
where the paper comes down.
You've got 24 hours to take it or not. This is, you send the note to the girl if, kind of through a friend. You get your friend to say, hey, if Johnny asks you out, will you say yes?
Mm-hmm.
And then if your answer is yes, well, then Johnny formally asks you out. And if your answer is, nah, I don't really want to go out with Johnny, Johnny doesn't ever ask you out, but that way you can't say that you turned Johnny down, when in reality you turned Johnny down. So if this thing ends up where Mike Bianco doesn't go to LSU and people go, he never got offered, you guys made this up, I know there's nothing I can do to convince you that we didn't. Why the hell would we make it up, by the way? Why would we That's the one. Why would we spend an hour on so? Yeah. But no. If he gets the offer, the formal, hey, here's your offer, mm-hmm. he's taking it. If he doesn't ever get that offer, it's because
Cohen sat in his living room. That's good enough. We'll go from there.
Yeah,
with Mississippi State.
Yeah,
a number came out that everybody was familiar with.
Something happened through an intermediary to stop the offer from quote being formally made. Because you always are going to hire your first choice.
I know Kendall said State wasn't interested, but that's what it is.
And this isn't to criticize Kendall, but sometimes Kendall has to tote some water to maintain his sourcing for what he does. He covers one thing.
One of the things here, too, is that while I do believe Cliff would take the job, he's going to have to kind of come down off this emotion he's on right now. Like, just playing this thing out, just for the sheer hypothetical of it. LSU hires Mike in the next 48 hours. Cliff Godwin's sole purpose in the coaching profession, not since 2015, period, has been to coach at East Carolina and get them to the College World Series.
Yeah.
Something that his mentor, Keith LeClair, who died of Lou Gehrig's disease, couldn't do.
That's why he wears number 23, right?
Why he wears number 23. Mm-hmm. It goes far beyond just, hey, I really liked my time here and I'd like to get them to Omaha. No, it is a emotional connection with Cliff that, frankly, I don't understand because I don't have that semblance of an emotional connection to a place.
Sure.
Like he does.
Sure.
He loves that place more than any human I know that loves his alma mater. And it's real and it's genuine. And that's why he was hurting yesterday is... Mm-hmm. Had he gone there, I think he could be, if he'd gone to Omaha, I think he could be at peace more with it. Go, okay, I did it. Now we can do the career or whatever.
Sure.
That's my only little bit of hang up with Cliff getting out right now, is how raw that hurt is, how raw all that is. I still think it's a yes, but I guess that's how I'm spinning this forward is what if it's not? And then you're out here, and then now it becomes...
And I can't relate to it.
I can just name some dudes, but I don't know.
Yeah, I can't relate to it, and you can't relate to it. But there are people who love an alma mater like they love a child.
Yeah, no, it's
and it's passionate. I mean, I look at it and just, I mean, I don't judge it, but I think I can't even begin to fathom that. I mean, and if he's that guy, then you have to go take a dream. He's got to give up a dream. Because the odds are overwhelming that when you walk away from it, you're never going back.
No, you're probably giving up on East Carolina as a coach at that point.
And so you...
Unless you go win other places and at the end of your career, go be a token for a little while. But
yeah,
that's
but even
it.
Then, that's what you are.
Yeah.
And then somebody else might do it. Because he's built it to a place where they're close.
Yeah. No, they're really good.
I mean, he did the Bum Phillips thing about we're knocking on the door.
Yeah.
You know... You're knocking on that door, and you're that close, and maybe you feel the door budge. Are you going to leave it for somebody else to hit? My gut feeling is that he would say, yes, I have to. Mm-hmm. But I do understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm told that he will, but
yeah.
I mean, point being, it goes beyond simply, hey, we're going to go grab an Ole Miss assistant and somebody who's been here. I mean, both those names make sense for a lot of different reasons. I mean, with Dan McDonald, you're getting one of the best college baseball coaches in the country. I mean, that's a no-brainer. With Cliff, you have to believe you're getting one of the up-and-coming college baseball coaches in the country. But where it goes past that, if Mike leaves, I have no idea. Again, I kind of know names I like, but I don't even know really what Keith would be keying on at that point and what he would feel like is important to him in a search.
There have been a couple people that have asked about Mike Clement. Would he be on the list?
I don't see any assistant getting a look there. Frankly, the news this week, and I have no idea. I haven't talked to Mike. I'm wondering if he's a candidate at A&M as the hitting coach under Schlossnagel. He turned that job down 2 years ago. Would he turn it down again? I have no idea. I don't know. But I know he did turn down the hitting coach job, recruiting coordinator job under Rob Childers in 2019. So
it turned out to be a smart move.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, no doubt. So I don't know where that stands, but there's been some.
And he turned it down because he kind of thought that's where they were headed.
Well, yeah, everybody knew Childress was
trouble.
I mean, because Childress is fired in 20 if the pandemic doesn't happen.
Right.
That would have happened a year ago.
Right.
So yeah, no, there was a lot more stability at Ole Miss at that point than Texas A&M for a hitting coach. No, I don't see Mike or Carl be getting real looks there. I feel like they're going to go higher up, sitting head coach, in my opinion. Tony Vitello was an assistant. I mean, stuff happens. But
sure.
I don't – there's just not the obvious ones, though, I guess, point being. Like, I know people mention his name, but I can't see Ole Miss really going out and getting Jake Gautreaux. I just – in my head, that doesn't seem like something that would happen.
What about the recruiting part of this where you are committing ninth graders? How does that work? Are they freed up to –
freed up as in what?
Well, I mean, I know they're free, but is there does the gentleman's agreement, which is already sort of tenuous, does it just completely go out the window with?
Well, it's going more out the window by the day anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be freed up a little bit, and frankly, you'd have some decommitments. Hey, let me step back. Let me, and then once that happens, I mean, you're free game again.
Sure.
Completely. So yeah, it would switch up some stuff from a recruiting standpoint that far back. No, I can't see a lot of kids that are still coming in a year like. That feels done,
right.
And they'll at least wait and do the benefit of the doubt thing as this thing moves forward.
So having the ties to this part of the country is pretty critical?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, I would want – there's probably some scenarios where it's worked, but, like, I know everybody was asking yesterday because it's the whole recency bias. Hey, go pay Jay Johnson at Arizona. Never been down here. Like,
yeah, he's recruiting the West Coast.
Yeah, that's – I mean, yeah, Ole Miss has gotten a couple dudes off the West Coast, but that's been connection kind of stuff and reasons. Yeah. You're not going to make your living in California trying to take those kids across the country. So,
well, I mean, the story you told me about how they got Jacob Gonzalez, you would not
that's
want
not to, happening as a, hey, this is our plan.
Yeah,
this is how we're going to do this.
No, that's – that would be a flawed strategy.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't know. I think it's very important for two things. To know this part of the country, and that's – I don't even just mean, hey, know the recruiting contacts. I mean know this part of the country.
Yeah.
Relate to this part of the country. The parents, what it's like. It's not the same as the West Coast. These kids grow up – actually, I mean, Jay Johnson mentioned this. Hey, the kids in the South grow up wanting to go to those schools. It's not like out here where – no, they just want to go play for the Cardinals or the whatever. It's
sure.
It's a more an emotional tie.
Sure.
And then while the summer league stuff is or travel team stuff is a little different, you got to have really deep connections in a lot of different travel team markets, typically in your region. So that's why it's important to you got to know the Orlando Scorpions and the Banditos and the East Cobb teams and that kind of stuff. You got to have those connections to get in. And hey, hey, here's this kid, but nobody knows about him yet. You need to be the coach that dude's telling instead of somebody else. I mean, that's kind of what happens there a lot too. So, I don't know. We'll see if it's relevant or not as the week moves forward. I mean, look, I think if Mike Bianco is the next choice at LSU, I mean, I do. I think this thing moves pretty fast. I mean, I think we're sometime this week.
Yeah, I think pretty based on just what people are saying down there, pretty quick. I mean, they kind of want to move on. They're
getting a little antsy.
Well,
they have to. What's funny about
I giggled
it
at your Huey
time,
Long
though.
Thing. I mean, there's a lot of politics at play. But the thing is, the heavy hitters wanted O'Sullivan, mm-hmm. and they can't. They have signed off on that now.
Yeah.
And I know nobody believes this, but LSU is just walking on eggshells institutionally right now with this Title IX thing. The last thing they can do is go make – or the last thing – let me rephrase that. The smart people in the room there, the hand-raised guy in their room, is like, hey, we don't need to roll the dice on a baseball coach. Let's get in a solid citizen here and a good dude who's going to run a clean program because we might have our hands full with other things. And Mike checks those boxes.
He does. Completely.
I mean, one gazillion percent.
Yeah. Whatever gripes is in his introductory press conference, if he ever has one, it won't be, hey, we got a bad guy. I mean, look, we got to be, come on.
Right.
There's nothing. So.
They're not worried about his Tinder account. They're not worried about.
Anything.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And so.
Unlike one former coach that pointed it out nationally, I mean, he has a glass of wine occasionally. Okay. That's about it with Mike. I mean, that's about as far as you go.
Yeah. I mean.
So,
you know, and who ultimately wins the power struggle at LSU right now?
I don't know,
but I don't know that. Here's my thing, and I could be wrong. I don't get the sense that the power brokers are going to give up. They're going to use some of their bullets on the baseball coaching search.
Mm-hmm.
There's potentially a football coaching search around the corner at LSU where they're going to have to make a home run hire.
Yeah. Podcast brought to you in part by Visit Oxford. Visit OxfordMS.com. Head there. See what's going on locally this week and every week. The Oxford Community Market back tomorrow. They're at the Pavilion on University. 3 to 6 the time for that. So produce and much more. It's the Summer Sunset Series. I think they had one last night every Sunday in June. So a couple more opportunities for that. That's in the Grove on Sunday nights. Live music. Take your picnic, take your blanket, enjoy something here locally in Oxford, especially with baseball out now as we move into the summer months. Good opportunity for that. So check out the events page. Double Decker Bus Tours coming back in the fall and more. Visit OxfordMS.com/events.
We're also brought to you by Whitney McNutt, Tommy Morgan Incorporated Realtors, serving you for all your real estate needs in Oxford and Tupelo. Whitney sells condos, land, commercial, and residential family homes. 662-567-2573 or 662-842-3844. Also brought to you by Alpha Specialties, located at 1670 Highway 80 in Pearl, Mississippi. Alpha is your trailer-specific professional. If you want to haul it, they can call it at Alpha. It's the premium trailer dealership in Mississippi. They've got Load Trail. It's the premium brand trailer, the highest quality utility equipment, dump, and gooseneck trailer being built today. And they also have Hallmark Cargo Trailers, one of the most quality cargo trailers on the market, perfect for hauling goods to markets and shows, ATVs to deer camps, hauling race cars, and more. And they can even work with third parties to have game day trailers and concession trailers built just for you. They also do all sorts of stuff with trailer parts, with a trailer service and inspection. They can repair all types of trailers. So get in touch with them at 601-932-9798 or check them out at alphaofms.com. And we're brought to you by our friends at Blue Delta Jeans. Blue Delta Jeans makes the best fitting, most comfortable jeans in the world because they're uniquely made for you and only you. Raw denim jeans, custom fit, hand-tailored in Tupelo, Mississippi. One size fits one at BlueDeltaJeans.com. I think Father's Day is this coming Sunday. Is that right?
It's typically middle Sunday in Omaha, typically, but I don't know.
Okay.
No, I thought it was still a week away, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm not a big Hallmark holiday dude. Father's Day could
June 20th. It is this Sunday.
It could pass by and no one could tell me and I'd never know.
Yeah.
For those of you that do, though, Father's Day right around the corner, so don't wait until the last minute to get a gift for the father in your life. A custom pair of Blue Delta jeans is a great way to show you care and give a gift that will bring a lifetime of joy. Visit BlueDeltaJeans.com, purchase a gift card that can be redeemed in person or online, or contact the folks at Blue Delta to schedule an in-person fitting for the dad in your life. Just use the code REBELGROVE, that's one word, all lowercase, REBELGROVE, online or in person for 10% off your pair of Blue Delta jeans. And we're brought to you by The Rogue. It's your destination for fine men's clothing. Their stylist hand select pieces from top designers, from work to lifestyle to nightlife. There's the perfect something for everyone at The Rogue. All the best items from Peter Millar, Martin Dingman, Jack Victor, Halsey, Duckhead, True Grit, and more at The Rogue, 4450 I-55 North in Jackson or therogue.com. And we're brought to you by Joey Erickson, Heron Gear Chevrolet. Let him help you find the vehicle you're looking for at a price you can afford. Choose from a full selection of new Chevy vehicles or get a great deal on numerous brands of reliable pre-owned vehicles. Just give Joey a call or text on his cell at 662-571-2367. Tell him what you're looking for. Stop by 1685 High Street in Jackson to test drive that new or used vehicle you've been wanting. Let Joey earn your business. And with any purchased vehicle, just tell him you heard about him here on the podcast or the Soft Verbal podcast. You get a $50 gas card.
So, I don't really necessarily know what's next from the standpoint. I mean, again, we're kind of waiting on LSU a little bit, waiting on whenever Keith...
Or Keith doing something preemptive.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's plenty of ammunition for him to push the issue a little bit here and go, hey, what's going on? I mean, less than had they won, because then you're going, hey, we need to extend, we need to get this done, you know, and you kind of see where it goes from there. So a little less than that, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would assume that the days move pretty quickly here. Like I said, I LSU doesn't calendar-wise have to move fast, but it feels like they're ready to move fast or kind of done with it in a way. So I think that probably does happen over the next 72 hours pending a start over.
Well, if they're going to get Mike,
no reason not to do it now.
They want to go ahead and get it done. The faster you get it done, the faster people – you know how this works. People that are against a coach quickly get for the coach after he's introduced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hypothetically, Mike Bianco could sit at a podium in Baton Rouge and talk about his love for his alma mater and Cammy's alma mater. And
Skip will be over there.
And the respect that he has for Skip and you know, crack some joke about how he's going to have to wear a different uniform number because his son has his. I mean, there's all sorts of crap that he could do that would endear him, that would endear him to the populace down there until he starts losing games. And the truth is, Mike doesn't lose regular season games much, so it'll come down to postseason. And frankly, replacing Paul Maneri, and this is no disrespect towards Paul, because I really like Paul, and I got to meet his dad a couple of times.
He's a nice dude.
And he's a fantastic guy. He's a big Cubs fan, and we sat and talked. We talked Cub minutia in 2003. I was sitting in the press box before LSU and somebody. And anyway, I think it was 2003 or 2007. I don't know. It was sometime. But, yeah. Wouldn't you rather be the one replacing Maneri right now as opposed to replacing Skip?
Well, yeah.
Replacing Skip was kind of like replacing Saban.
Yeah, good luck.
You know, Maneri did not finish with a flourish.
No, it's been pretty average.
And so, you know, you take a trip to Omaha now in your first couple of years there, and you're immediately everybody's guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of looking. I pulled it up. Maneri was in the College World Series last in 2017. He lost in a regional in 18 and then a super regional in 19 and 21.
Yeah.
Also kind of shows their expectations, though, because, I mean, still not bad.
Well, their expectations are to get to Omaha.
And then win it.
And then, frankly, to win in Omaha.
Yeah. He was the College World Series runner-up in 17. They lost to Florida in the final. He also went in 15, 13, won it all in 9, and went in 8. Missed the postseason once in his twice in his tenure. His very first year in 07, and then 2011 when they had the 22 RPI, 13-17 in the league, and missed the regionals. So those are the two times. His background prior to that was actually the last time Notre Dame has been in the College World Series. He was the coach at Notre Dame when they went in 2002. With the Fighting Irish there.
Is that tonight, Notre Dame State?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, State's lucky to still be in it. I mean, they kind of escaped game one and then got popped pretty good yesterday.
What have you thought of the broadcast?
It's
awful. Now,
send people to the stadiums.
It's very hard to broadcast
Arizona,
a game.
Look, credit to Ole Miss. They have a really good production crew, one of the best in the country. That was Arizona's production crew, and the cameraman looked drunk. I mean, the ball's over here, and the camera's here. I mean,
yeah.
You don't necessarily appreciate it when it's good, but you know it so quickly when it's bad. And that was that was horrific camera work over those 3 days in Tucson.
And the broadcasting part, when you're not at the stadium, that is really hard.
I don't know if we've had a more awkward – what went on like 20 minutes, but I know it wasn't. When they were interviewing Mike Candrea – on Friday night.
The softball coach.
He's in the stands with AirPods in, and like they go to break, come back to him. It's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, where was hand raised guy on, hey guys, abort? Like,
I know he's a very famous name in college softball, but
kind of wasn't the time.
Yeah,
right.
Like, come on. Well, and then like the announcers, like they're people we kind of know, but they've got like Arizona jerseys hanging up in the back. It was just all kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I blame ESPN.
Oh, it's their fault completely.
I don't blame the announcers.
No,
they got assigned, and it was bad, but it was predictably bad.
It was going to be bad unless you got one of the two main crews for whatever they were, and sometimes they're to add.
Yeah, but you needed a crew that could be there at the stadium, who could talk to people, who could – it's been this way everywhere. And I think for ESPN, I can't decide whether this is virtue signaling or a money grab
or both. It's money at this point. It's saving money. Well, because there's even a huge difference in, you know, we got this in basketball even before COVID, calling from the studio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Versus, but this home thing creates a whole different level of.
And I don't know how people do the basketball from a
remote site.
I mean, I've watched some of these NBA radio guys. Uh-huh. They're in their home arena and the team that they.
Oh, they're in their arena, though.
Well, in their home arena.
Yeah, right.
But the
right,
team
yeah,
that
yeah.
they're covering
is on the road.
Is in Denver and they're in Phoenix calling a game on televisions. Without the action happening in front of you, without the referee being able to come over and explain
to you. That's complicated.
I mean, man, some of those guys reveal how good they are because you can only tell occasionally. I mean.
That's fascinating.
I mean, I can't imagine. Number one, I can't imagine calling basketball anyway because it's so fast.
Where you're not just going Johnson to Smith, back to Johnson,
right.
Smith to the corner, elbow shot. Rebound Smith.
You're trying to paint a picture for the person listening on the radio, and you're watching on these screens with no ability to look up and talk about what's actually happening in front of your face.
Surely to God.
About football? I mean, that's what I'm guessing.
Right?
I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, we didn't mention this, and now it's completely irrelevant, but... I was going to say passive-aggressive, but I don't guess it's even passive-aggressive. The College World Series sent out an email essentially telling people not to show up.
Yeah, I didn't think it was passive-aggressive.
And restricted access to make it where I don't know why any boss would sign off on it. Because, frankly, you're harming the kids. No opening ceremonies,
yeah,
which is a pretty big deal in Omaha
that course,
night.
Of course, sure.
No opening ceremonies, and then zero field access, even on practice days or anything. No shots inside the stadium from a broadcast standpoint, like no stand-ups.
Right.
Like,
so you're doing
I mean,
your
literally, you're walled off from the facility.
Your stand-ups are like way off in the parking lot somewhere.
Yeah, it would be in that big parking lot right across. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or like by the statue, I guess.
No, I had people ask me, like, what are you guys going to do if Ole Miss makes it? And I said... The only way we would go, and I don't even know that we would have gone then, would
final
if they
two.
Got to the final series.
Yeah.
But then if you can't watch it inside the building, I mean, what are you doing? You're going as a ticket holder and then finding a Zoom call?
Yeah.
And I guess I thought, well, one of us could be in the stadium as a ticket holder and the other could get on the Zoom. It'd be a ways around it, but
yeah.
But it wouldn't be the kind of coverage that you'd want to provide for something like that.
Yeah, no.
And like Tennessee, they're going to want to take a ton of media.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. That email was don't.
That email also said if you have a ton of media, we're going to tell the SID to order you guys, and only a few of you are even getting into the press box.
Very few.
Yeah.
And we're going to segregate you off someplace because.
Yeah.
To protect the student athletes.
Yeah. Well, because that was the thing. It was like no field access because of tier. Like, what? I was like, okay, fine, like whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been hanging out with these dudes all year, but sure.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That was really good when the announcer in the middle of the game learned that Plumlee was a quarterback. Like, they're just seat of their pants. Like,
did they not do any homework?
It was almost kind of refreshing because it's like, we talk about that so much, you didn't know.
Yeah,
really?
I know.
Some bitch. Just think if Ely had been out there too, your mind would have been blown.
Blown,
like,
yeah.
It's like, Jesus.
But I mean, calling a baseball game from a remote location. It's very difficult. Baseball's a game that has a different kind of pace to it. You need to be there.
I don't know. We'll see what the other bracket looks like. I still like Vanderbilt to win the College World Series until somebody eliminates Vanderbilt from the College World Series.
Yeah.
They catch a break. Arkansas not in the field. They get NC State, Arizona, and whomever
else. And Arkansas is an example of you have a flaw, and that flaw gets exposed in the postseason, and you can either bridge it or you don't, and they could not quite bridge it. I did hate for that kid yesterday that he got trotted back out in the ninth. When he finished them in the eighth with the big strikeout, mm-hmm. after they intentionally walked the guy, he was clearly on fumes. You could see it. and he willed his way to a strikeout pitch. You owed it to that kid. Dave Van Horn did. I'm sorry, but he did. You owed it to that kid to go, that's it. We asked a ton of you. My God, you delivered 8 innings, 2 runs. You're either going to get a no decision or a win right here.
Yeah.
But you're not going back out there to lose. And they sent him back out. That was a weird – if I'm an Arkansas person today, I'd have questions about, so now wait a minute. We went this whole season, and on the biggest game of the year, you only trusted the closer that you used the day before.
And Wicklander.
And your starting pitcher from Friday night.
Yeah.
That's weird. Like, I'd have real questions about that. And then kudos to NC State, man. Their pitchers were dominant.
They were. Yeah.
So. I don't think Notre Dame or Mississippi State, either one, has the goods to go the distance.
I don't either.
I don't think Tennessee does. But now they're playing with house money. They got nothing to lose.
Kind of curious. I think Stanford could play okay in that park and be okay a little bit.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Arizona's so effective at the plate.
The way they just grind.
And they work pitching. I mean, if you told me that they got Rocker out in the sixth.
At least have a shot.
Trailing 2-1 and then put 3 or 4 together on some bull, I'd buy it maybe.
Yeah.
Really effective approach at the plate.
But Vandy gets by them. They get NC State or Stanford, whoever it
yeah.
is. And it feels.
Yeah. Feels like they're cruising.
Yeah. So.
And then they get into a 3-game series, and as we see,
they're very complicated.
You throw those cats.
Yeah.
And they're both on right now. Mm-hmm. They were dealing this weekend.
So whatever news pops up, that at rebelgrove.com. Some coverage there, a little more coverage later today whenever I get a second to write it and get it out. And then we'll be back with you tomorrow sometime around the same time. I don't know. We haven't talked about it, but we'll let you know. So hit the bell for notifications. It works most of the time, so we appreciate that. Subscribe and all those different things. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.